The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Much of yesterday, Israel's war cabinet were in discussion over how they will react to Iran's missile attack at the weekend. Israel has vowed to retaliate, but what the response might be remains unclear. British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak is among global leaders who expected to speak to Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu and warn him against a further escalation of the conflict. Now, joining me now to talk about all of this is Scott Lucas, Professor and Political Analyst at the Clinton Institute at University College Dublin. Scott, good morning.
Good morning to you, Pat.
Now, the concern, I suppose, is that Israel might do what it's wanted to do for some time, which is target Iran's nuclear facilities.
Well, let's break that down a bit, Pat. It certainly has been in the case in the past that the Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has wanted to strike Iranian targets, including possibly nuclear facilities inside Iran. In 2012, he was blocked from doing so by Israel's military and intelligence establishment. It is not clear that those around Netanyahu, including the war cabinet, including the Israeli military and the intelligence services, have now swung in favor of striking Iran on Iranian territory, even after last week's or last Saturday night's missile and drone strikes by the Iranians. And I say that for a key reason, which is that the Iranian attack, Pat, was not meant primarily to cause significant damage to the Israelis. That might sound strange, given the fact that they fired over 320 missiles and drones.
Yeah, I heard an interview yesterday, Scott, that from the chargé d'affaires at the Iranian embassy in Dublin saying, well, we knew they'd all be stopped, and that's why we did what we did. It was spectacular. I'm paraphrasing now. Spectacular, but utterly ineffective, as we knew it would be.
And on this case, an Iranian official actually told the truth. The Iranians, days before the attack, not only let their neighbors know that it was going to happen, they told Turkey and Switzerland, who then told the United States. In other words, the Iranians knew they had channels to tell the Americans, all right, this is happening. That meant the Americans, and thus the Israelis, could track the missiles and drones. They knew where the launch sites were. And indeed, of course, the U.S., France, the U.K., and Israel knocked down missiles failed, so that only 1%, only about 7 to 9 ballistic missiles actually hit those airfields. And the airfields that they hit were in a sparsely populated area in the desert in southern Israel. So there was only minor damage, only one serious casualty, a 7-year-old girl who had to undergo surgery. Because it was a demonstration attack, the Iranians pretty much were saying, all right, we've made our point. Let's draw a line here. Does that mean that Israel accepts that? I think, Pat, what I'd be looking for is this. Rather than Israel going directly after Iranian facilities, part maybe from a token strike, which would be, in effect, telegraphing to the Iranians, we're going to hit this particular military position. You need to clear your personnel. Apart from that, they're going to hit Iranian allies and proxy groups outside the country. I suspect they're going to hit Hezbollah in Lebanon. They will hit Iranian-led militias in Iraq and in Syria, and they'll hit them pretty hard. The open question is whether Israel continues to try to assassinate Iranian commanders in Syria, which, of course, is the incident that provoked the Iranian retaliation last weekend.
Yeah. And I mean, the Israelis said this wasn't part of the consulate. It was a military facility. That is nonsense. I mean, I'm sure the Israeli embassy has Mossad agents in many of its key locations. So do you say, therefore, that the Israeli embassy is not really an embassy? It's a center of intelligence and therefore a target. I don't think anyone really bought Israel's excuse that hitting a diplomatic compound was hitting a military target.
No, they didn't. And let's be clear here, because I heard someone trying to justify this on Irish television last night. A consulate provides consular services. They arrange visas. They deal with problems that Iranian citizens would have had in Syria. So it is a diplomatic mission and is therefore protected under international law, even if military personnel are meeting there, which is why the Israelis hit it, because Iran's top general for Syria and Lebanon was killed in the strike. And when the Israelis did that, I think even for the United States and other partners, the Israelis crossed the line. You know, they were fine with the fact that Israel had been killing Iranian commanders since December. They knocked off Iran's top general for Syria, overseeing operations there on Christmas Day. But once the Israelis not only carry out targeted assassinations, but do it on Iranian territory, which is what a diplomatic mission is, no, that risked isolating Israel in terms of its justification.
Now, the effectiveness of what happened over the weekend, because of the early warning from Iran and also because of the cooperation of Saudi Arabia, the Emirates and Jordan, as well as the assistance, the military assistance of the United States and the UK, it had a positive outcome, with the exception of that young girl who needs medical treatment. But a positive outcome. Life went on as usual in Tel Aviv on the weekend. No problems. So they can't guarantee, though, that another operation by Israel would have the same level of support, particularly, I would imagine, in Jordan, where there's a huge Palestinian population.
No, I think as the Israeli war cabinet weighs up its responses, I think they know that. I think there's a lot of chatter right now, which just simply assumes, look, Benjamin Netanyahu is unhinged. Look at the fact that, you know, he's been willing to try to obliterate Gaza and try to wipe out the civilian population as well as Hamas. So therefore, he's going to try to wipe out Iran. You know, the Israeli system is far more complex than that. And all along with the Gaza operations, they've had to calibrate. In other words, how much international support are they going to risk losing? And I think you make a very key point here, Pat. And that is, it is notable that Jordan actively joined the operations to intercept the Iranian missiles and drones. Saudi Arabia and the UAE did not join the operation. They denied, in other words, they didn't let the Americans operate in their airspace, but they did help provide intelligence on the Iranians. So there is cooperation with the Israelis to defend it against an Iranian assault. There is not, however, cooperation with the Israelis to continue their open-ended war in Gaza, because they have been attacked by Iran. And that's a vital distinction that the Israelis need to recognize.
Now, Israel is a relatively small country. I mean, it's a little bit bigger than Ireland, maybe 1.5 times bigger than the population of the island of Ireland. Can they continue to wage the war in Gaza, go into Rafah, and also be watching their backs in the border with the Hezbollah in Lebanon, the possibility of drone attacks from Iran, the possibility of escalation? I mean, there's only so much one suspects that a relatively small country like Israel can do.
As long as the situation remains at the current level, which is a horrible way to describe the mass killings going on, yes, Israel can continue these assaults in Gaza, even possibly, you know, the invasion of Rafah, although that has been postponed for the moment, while maintaining skirmishes with Hezbollah. And there are skirmishes which have killed hundreds of Hezbollah fighters, as well as defending itself, for example, from drone attacks from Iran's allies, the Houthis, who have been lobbing them over from Yemen. But if you get what is effectively a war with Hezbollah, so you now have a two-front war with Gaza and then the Lebanese front, if you have Iran pumping in more military assistance to Hezbollah in that war, if you have the Iranian-backed militias in Iraq and in Syria resuming their attacks, which they suspended at the end of January, on American personnel, no, that then overstretches Israel. And that, again, is something which I think has to weigh on the idea that Israel would simply strike Iranian targets. Because if they strike Iranian targets inside Iran, I suspect that the Iranian regime has no choice but to actually, you know, go into that direct war that they have so far been trying to avoid over the past 6-7 months.
There is one final irony we should draw attention to, which is that over the skies of Ukraine, you have Shahed missiles, drones rather, manufactured in Iran, getting through and doing damage and taking lives. But over Israel, all of these are shot down.
Ukrainian lives are expendable. I'm just going to tell your listeners that. You know, we can debate the rights and wrongs in terms of assistance to Ukraine against what is now a 26-month Russian aggression. But given that the Russians have escalated their missile and drone strikes in recent days, once again trying to knock out Ukraine's energy structure, infrastructure, once again trying to break the will of the civilian population. You know, United States spokesman John Kirby reiterated last night, no, we're not going to provide any assistance to try to intercept those, you know, Russian missiles and drones. We're not, you know, the president said we're not going to be directly involved in this conflict. So they've kind of made it clear, apart from the U.S. Congress being dysfunctional and blocking that aid, which is needed, no, the United States, the U.K., other European countries, they're not going to protect Ukrainians the way that they protected Israelis because of this idea that they don't want to, quote, escalate with Russia, like Russia hasn't escalated already.
Scott, thank you very much for joining us. Scott Lucas, professor and political analyst at the Clinton Institute at University College Dublin.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.